שלום חברים. ברוך הבא לכל מקשיבים. This is Dr. Duff Forbes, Rabbi, Kehilat HaMashiach B'toch Yisrael. Welcome, my friends, to this program entitled Treasures from Tanakh. My dear friends, the Spanish philosopher and poet Yehuda Halevi has declared, "Our religion has three elements: fear, love, and joy, by each of which one can draw near to God." Which observation reminds me of the following passage from the book of Job in the Tanakh. "Now it fell upon a day that the sons of God came to present themselves before the Eternal, and Satan came also among them." I dare say some of you, my friends, are thinking, what a strange association of ideas. What bridge of thought can possibly exist to connect the one quotation to the other? Well, it is perfectly true that fear, love, and joy each stretch out their hand and draw us near to God. With that concept, I certainly have no quarrel. But, and here's the point, what is fear doing in the company of love and joy? Love and joy are the sons of God, but fear is manifestly a child of Satan. Granted, too, that God used Satan to draw Job closer to him. But let us be on our guard to distinguish between the pedigrees. As I said, fear is a child of Satan. It has no place among the sons of God by family relationship. If I could borrow Job's garments just for a moment, I would prefer to dress Yehuda Halevi's statement in them and reintroduce his thought to you as follows. "Now it fell upon a day that love and joy came to present themselves before the Eternal, and fear came also among them." Fear is a very terrible and painful emotion. Its brothers and sisters have unpleasant names, well-earned: dread, fright, terror, apprehension, panic are among its closest relatives, a nasty bunch. What is fear? The customary definition that fear is the feeling or condition of being afraid, it's about as satisfying to our spiritual and psychological appetites as a carefully filleted caraway seed would be. Oh no, fear is a monster that we cannot slay with a definition. Whence comes this son of Satan? Well, there is only one place to which I feel I can turn for a reliable answer to this question: our Holy Scriptures. I first find fear where felicity once flourished, in the garden in Eden, but it made its ugly appearance after the fall of man. God, seeking the companionship of the man he had created in his own image and after his own likeness, now found that image and likeness marred and distorted by the introduction of something totally foreign to the image and likeness of deity. That foreign element was fear. Cries Adam, "I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid." Here indeed is the fall of man, to be terror-stricken and to dread the divine presence is a condition the enormity of which it would be beyond imagination to compute. Although fear is a foreigner, it is nonetheless a fact. And it is equally a fact that dread of the divine presence is an experience and condition so universal in mankind that it points to a universal cause. Fear is but a symptom. But of what is it a symptom? Beyond doubt, dread of the divine presence is a symptom of sin. Equally beyond doubt, the divine presence is bent upon the removal of this anomaly. Within the divine economy, sin is a singularity, albeit a substantial singularity. Within the human economy, fear, sin's symptom, is both freak and phantom. A freak is unpleasantly substantial. A phantom is unpleasantly unsubstantial. Perhaps I should enlarge upon this. Fear is a freak. Man was created to love and enjoy the divine presence, not to fear him. Yet man's fear, though thus freakish, is justified. It is substantial, for darkness must ever retreat at the approach of light, and God and all his works are light, whereas the same could never be said of man. But fear is also a phantom, and a phantom is unsubstantial. Much of man's fear is unjustified, because it has no substantial or objective cause to give it validity. These are the innumerable instances in man's experience where the only thing to be feared is fear. This is when the phantom haunts the man. Only the fear is real, not the phantom. Now I believe God is using fear, both freak and phantom, to destroy fear. In the personality of each man, God has set up his own representative, the faculty of conscience, which drives man, whether instinctively or reflectively, to measure his state and actions. This measurement invariably accuses, giving rise to a sense of guilt and breeding fear of the divine presence. Thus conscience, says Shakespeare, does make cowards of us all. Collective cowardice, divinely ordained, became a shield against molestation for our father Jacob. The incident is recorded in the 34th and 35th chapters of Genesis. The unworthy conduct of Simeon and Levi caused Jacob to fear. He exclaimed, "Ye have troubled me to make me odious unto the inhabitants of the land, even unto the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I being few in number, they will gather themselves together against me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house." Jacob's fear was substantial and justified, but the danger was greater than superficial thought would indicate. Jacob and his household was the divinely appointed vehicle for carrying forward the sublime messianic pledges of redemption first uttered to Adam in Eden, then projected through Abraham and vested in Jacob, whose name, you will remember, was divinely changed to Israel. God could not allow the folly of Simeon and Levi to place in jeopardy the spiritual welfare of all Israel and all mankind, so he paralyzed the populace with a phantom fear. For we read of Jacob and his household that as they journeyed, a terror of God was upon the cities that were round about them, and they did not pursue after the sons of Jacob. Fear was again a factor favorable to the divine beneficent purposes on the memorable occasion of the crossing of the Jordan. In the 5th chapter of the book of Joshua, we read of the terror which overcame the native kings of Canaan when they heard how the Eternal had dried up the waters of the Jordan until the children of Israel had all passed over. Their heart melted, neither was their spirit in them any more. Indeed, fear is not one of God's children, though he uses it. To God's family belong love and joy. God himself is love, and one who had experienced God's grace in a supreme measure, was able to declare, "There is no such thing as fear in love. Rather does utter love expel fear." These words were capable of utterance because of association with the Messiah Redeemer of Israel, who himself declared, "I have spoken unto you thus, that I may have joy in you, and that your joy may be complete." Joy is something deeper than happiness. Happiness can only laugh, but joy can also weep. Weep for those who have not yet tested and tasted the love of God and the joy of experiencing the great salvation he has already provided in the one whom he sent to Israel and to all the world. But there is a third child of God before whom fear must fade. That child is faith. Faith, of course, placed where God directs it. Faith in the Messiah, to whom the law, the prophets, and the writings, the entire Tanakh, all bear united testimony. Through that Messiah, the whole nation of Israel will yet experience Isaiah's joyful prophecy, "In that day shall this song be sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city, walls and bulwarks doth he appoint for salvation. Open ye the gates, that the righteous nation that keepeth faithfulness may enter in." Through that Messiah, the individual Jew or Gentile may even now experience Isaiah's joyful prophecy, "The mind stayed on thee, thou keepest in perfect peace, because it trusteth in thee." For such a happy individual, when fear knocks at the door, faith opens it and finds no one there. Yivarecha Adonai v'yishmerecha, Ya'ir Adonai panav eilecha v'hunecha, Yisar Adonai panav eilecha v'yaseim lecha shalom. The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. Amen.